This is the New York Jazz Workshop in Conversation at Home. I'm your host, CJ Shern. The music you are hearing in this very special edition of the podcast is from vocalist Tana Alexa's brand new sophomore recording, Ona. The album title means she in Croatian and celebrates not only the journey of herself as a woman, but women everywhere. In the podcast, you'll hear Alexa, the Porin nominee for the Best Jazz Composition and Alpe Aldria International Songwriting Contest winner, discuss her growth as an artist and human being between her 2015 debut, Ode to Heroes, and the new record, the people in her life that served as inspiration for tracks on the album, and her role in organizing the massively successful Live From Our Living Rooms Music Festival, the first streaming music festival of the COVID-19 era, a fundraiser with vocalist Sarin Tip and saxophonist Owen Broder that aims to help New York musicians out of work because of the pandemic. Tana, it's so great to have you back on the New York Jazz Workshop in conversation with Ceres.
Thank you.
It's been
always awesome to talk to you.
Thank you. Yeah, you too. It's been like 5 years since we did our last talk, I think.
Oh my God, really?
Six years? Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's crazy. This album, though, Ona, it's really, you know, it put me in mind of, there's certain artists, the first person who came to mind was Ben Williams, because he had such a huge gap of time between his second and third albums, and even his latest one that just came out, and people's inspiration and their craft really grow, and this album is such a statement of your arrival, I really think.
And thank you.
Just discuss the album in general for the listeners here.
I mean, first of all, thank you. I'm so glad that you feel something when you listen to the record. I mean, it's been one of the most inspiring and motivating things about releasing this record is the response that I've been getting, not just from the music, but from the message of the music, that it's been inspiring so many people. I mean, that just really gives me so much positive reinforcement that, you know, when I spoke my truth and people that resonated with people, it really means a lot to me. And, you know, this album is about, it's about the lives of women. So between the 10 tracks, I basically go into, from the perspective of my life, of course, because that's the life that I live and the life that I haven't, you know, any experience with. I go into basically these themes that I've come up with, which are, you know, the different emotions that a woman experiences, the elements of her sexuality, the feelings and experiences of not being heard or believed, redefining gender ascribed roles. And then obviously every woman comes from a lineage of women. You know, you aren't just born and you have no history, you know? And so I feel like it's not only the woman that you are born to be, but it's the lineage of women that you come from as well, which was such an inspiration for me in this album, because of the women that are in my family who struggled across generations and cultures for me to be able to feel free enough to create this album. And I dedicate it to the two of them, my mother and my grandmother, and obviously the women that came before them who I never even met. But those two women in particular have throughout my entire life shown me what it really means to fight the fight, whether you're being vocal about that fight or whether you're just living your life and doing what you know you need to do as a woman. And so really the idea behind the record came from my many conversations that I had with my grandmother and my mother. And and just experiencing through their words what they went through in the different periods in history that they lived through, the different cultures that they lived through, the struggles, you know, the struggles that were not necessarily fights and battles for women, but just life struggles in general, war, poverty, hunger, you know, all of these different things, being an immigrant, you know, all of the things that are related to my family that the, you know, my family experienced, but in particular, these women experienced in a special way because of the fact that they are women. So that's kind of where the inspiration came from. And I'm really happy with the way that it all came together, because I really feel like the album is all encompassing of what the life of a woman is.
Exactly. And I like what you just said there, because this album, not only does it encapsulate the experience of, as you said, women in your family, but women form a lineage back to ancestral spirits, you could say, and also the common struggle for human rights. I think it's so important that this record, yes, it's about the experience of being a woman, but it's also about just the struggle for human rights and,
yep.
and being a great human being. And really, one of the events that inspired the album was the Women's March in January of 2017. So please talk about that, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. So when I went to the Women's March on Washington in January of 2017, Donald Trump had just been elected, and the day after, we all gathered for our various women's marches around the world. And I had never been a part of anything like that before. And to march in solidarity for women's and human rights, being a part of this historic moment and feeling the energy and positivity and power that comes from many, many voices supporting each other, it was unlike any other experience I've ever had. And it prompted me to come home after that experience, and I immediately wrote the second tune on the album, which is called The Resistance.
Right, right.
And that was kind of the beginning of everything. And at that point, I knew that I was writing music for a next record, but I didn't know what the theme was going to be. I didn't know what the tunes were about. And it was really, you know, I wrote The Resistance first, and then I started to write the next tunes after that. And it wasn't until I was like two or three tunes in that I realized that there was this common theme of women. And so, and then, and one day I remember I was talking to my grandmother, I think, and all of a sudden, just in my mind, Ona came through like a vision. It was O-N-A, all capitals in Croatian, just like that. And I was like, wow, that's something, you know, there's something there. So basically when I realized what the theme was and then the name of the record came to me, then the rest of the tunes were easy to put together, relatively speaking, because I had this idea in my head. You know, I knew the story that I wanted to tell, but it was interesting how that story didn't present itself to me until, you know, basically a portion of the record was already written. It was almost like, you know, Ona, she told me, this is what you need to do.
Yeah. And it's very interesting because Ona also, well, Ono no Hito in Japanese means woman.
I know.
I thought that the parallels that in both languages, Croatian and Japanese, that the word means woman was quite an interesting coincidence, but actually maybe it's not a coincidence, you know?
And in many languages, actually, not just in Croatian and Japanese, I think also in Polish and Czech, in Serbian, Bosnian, obviously, you know, all of the Slavic. The Slavic languages, most of them have Ona. So, you know, it's a really interesting discovery.
Yeah.
And I think also in Israeli, there's something Ona.
Really?
Yep.
Wow, I had no idea. That's pretty cool, actually.
So, but it's funny because that's part of what people have been writing to me, you know, in their individual languages. Oh, I didn't know that you, you know, for example, like, I didn't know that you spoke Japanese. I'm like, no, I don't speak Japanese. This is not a Japanese title. But it apparently relates to something in Japanese. So it's just really interesting how it's connected people and connected me to people.
Yeah, because I had mentioned that to you long before the record came out. When you were
Oh,
talking
yeah.
about the record, I was like, I messaged you. I was like, oh, you know, Ona Nohito means woman in Japanese, right? And you're like, oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, I didn't even know at that point what, you know, just kind of the scope of what that word meant, you know, what it meant in so many different languages to so many different people. So that's been a really cool discovery.
For sure, you know, and I do want to talk about the resistance, but before we do, I was watching a documentary on Amazon a while ago about racism in the church, and it talked about the Women's March, and one of the perspectives that I found very fascinating was black feminists were talking about how that march, they felt it wasn't really for them, that it was mostly white women. And that was a very, and pertaining to white women's issues. And I thought that was a very interesting perspective because I always felt like that march being the biggest single day protest in American history, that it really spoke to so many issues that would cover so many people, you know what I mean? And the resistance, that is really such a powerful track. I mean,
Thank you.
you're welcome. When Stacy Ann Chin, when she did her fiery oration from her book, that was like, holy shit, you know what I
Yeah, I
mean?
mean, when she did it in the studio, the thing is that's actually a really interesting moment that I want to talk to. But first, I want to address your comment about the Women's March and about the controversy around it. And you know, I was definitely made aware of a lot of these issues surrounding the organization of the Women's March, claiming, you know, lots of claims that it was really not representative of women of all colors, of all backgrounds, of all religions, of, you know, but specifically about women of color. And you know, I don't really know if I have an opinion on that, to be honest, because I mean, I can see arguments from both sides. And you know, but the thing is that when I was there, I saw a mix of every kind of women you can imagine. And equally speaking, the speakers that were there that day were also, you know, there were women of color, women of different religions, women of, you know, non-binary women. I mean, it was a really, to me, it seemed all-inclusive event. However, my perspective is very different as I am not a woman of color. So, you know, I've listened to a lot of the controversies around that and the arguments relating to that. And I mean, I do see a lot of the sides. I mean, I don't think I'm the one who should say whether it is or is not inclusive. I think it was attempting to be inclusive. And you know, it's really difficult to say whether or not, I mean, you can say that people felt excluded, and obviously their feelings should be justified, but I don't know that that was the intention. And I know that, of course, when people feel excluded and feel certain things, the intention of the other party or whatever you want to call it, is not necessarily what they're concerned with, you know, whether you intended to or not. I still feel this way, you know. So it's a difficult conversation to have, but you know, In speaking to that, I mean, Stacey Ann Chin's poem, the excerpt from her poem, which she so brilliantly performed on the album, was an excerpt from a poem that she wrote specifically for the Black Lives Matter movement, which came out on her most recent book release called Crossfire, which is a collection of her poetry. And when she came into the studio, she brought a number of options of, you know, basically she took out like a huge thump of paper, boom, right on the table, and was like, all right, so what do you think we should do? And that we had actually never met. We met the day that she came into the studio. We had only been emailing up until that point. And I had told her a lot about the record and about the ideas behind it. And I told her, basically, I want to give you full rein on, you know, what do you want to say? This is what the record is about. This is what the song is about. You're free to write something new. If you feel comfortable with reciting something that you've already written, that's great. You know, I knew that giving her the context of the music and having her decide would be the best possible option. So, mm-hmm. So she came and she, you know, showed me a few different things. And then together we decided that this part of this poem was really the most, we felt the sparks, you know, when I was reading it and she was reading it out loud. And so anyway, we tried it a bunch of different ways. And it was funny because originally when I used to play this song live, mm-hmm. when I was first putting it together and, you know, workshopping it, the part where Stacey Ann has her bit, it was a solo section, like, you know, a crazy distorted guitar solo kind of thing. So it had a set number of bars and it was, you know, a very specific solo section. And we tried to do it in this way, you know, just like, you know, okay, it's going to be this number of bars. When we get to this point, then Stacey Ann is going to say this word and da da da. And it just started to feel so contrived. And it was actually Antonio who was like, look, why don't we play the solo section up to this point, and then when we hear Stacey Ann getting to this specific word, let's just go batshit crazy and just improvise with her as she's finishing this part of the poem. And that ended up being the most freeing experience, because basically when Stacey Ann goes batshit crazy in the poem, so does the band, and everybody, you know, and everybody just goes nuts, and everybody fed off of each other's energy, and it was really a beautiful improvisational moment that we captured there.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I heard that whole speech, I actually thought it was a sample because it was so. It sounded like it was from a rally or something.
I mean, and that was the idea. That's what I wanted it to feel like. I produced it that way so that it would make you feel like you were standing in that crowd of hundreds of thousands of people and Stacey Ann Chin was speaking to you through a megaphone and telling you this thing. That was the vibe I wanted.
Yeah, it was so organic, that level of production. And I love what Antonio suggested, that to play the solo section up to a certain point and then just improvise in a complete free, skronky improv. I mean, that's...
Yeah, yeah.
I would love to hear someday, like, the individual takes that led up to that section or...
They were equally great. It was just, you know, like the band would finish in one place and Stacey Ann would finish later, or Stacey Ann would finish before the band was finished. You know, it was like there was no way to, because Stacey Ann, obviously she's very musical, but she's not a musician. Yeah. So she doesn't think in terms of like number of bars or,
right,
you know,
right,
time signature and that kind of thing. So,
right.
So she was kind of like, you know, it would be helpful for me, like, to know when the thing is finishing. And then we were like, but, you know, we don't want the music to dictate when you're done. We want you to do your thing and then we will follow you. That was kind of the vibe.
Yeah, it's like, whereas you or I would think in music, somebody like her or another spoken word artist would think maybe in a different way. And it's so beautiful that you can create a melding of the two that way.
Mm.
And while we're talking about the just the studio time, you
Mm-hmm.
had the great Regina Carter come in
Yeah.
and do just an amazing solo on Pachamama, which there's a couple of directions that I want to go with this. Pachamama is about the goddess of the earth, I believe, and your name, Tana, is the Illyrian goddess. Not too many people have that name in the world,
It's
correct?
true. The Illyrian goddess of spring. That's Tana. Yeah. I didn't know you knew
Yeah,
that.
well, it's from listening to the other press that you've done about the record and everything like that. But Pachamama, Regina Carter came in and laid it down in one take, right?
I mean, her solo is one take. It's unbelievable. She did many takes because, as artists, we're always trying to self-edit and correct. And but what ended up feeling like the most incredible take was the first one. It was just unbelievable because, and it was funny because when she came, she originally was supposed to be in the studio with us for our two recording dates at Bunker Studio in Brooklyn, and she got the flu. And she called me and just said, "Tana, I'm so sorry. I'm really, really sick, and I don't think I'm going to be able to make it." And normally I would have been out of my mind, like, "Oh God, how are we going to make this work? I'm going to have to pay for more studio time, blah, blah." But because of the fact that Antonio and I have a studio in our basement, which you can't really record a band live because there's no isolation. But you can record very easily individual instruments. Antonio's always doing drums, I'm doing vocals, we can do guitars, we can do bass, but everything has to be individual. And so I said, no problem, we'll just you get better and we'll have you over to the house one day and we'll just knock out everything in an afternoon. And she said, no problem. So we ended up getting together, it was like a few weeks later, after the original dates that we recorded with the band. But that particular first take, I mean, it's one thing when you're in the studio and you're recording with somebody that you idolize and have been listening to for so long. And Regina is one of those people that just, I love her as a person. I love her music. I love her sound. She has such a unique voice on the violin. And, but then getting to hear her, not only in the same recording space, but because our studio has no, like, the recording room is the control room. So there's no plexiglass or separation. I mean, Antonio and I were sitting there, in the chairs engineering as she was standing literally 2 feet or 3 feet away, without isolation, just playing into the mic. And getting to hear, and I actually intentionally had with my headphones, I had one ear off of my headphones so that I could hear her acoustic violin sound. And then the other one, I was listening to everything, on the record, what she was tracking with the whole background track and everything. So, but hearing someone and seeing someone like Regina do that, it's experiencing what someone great is put on this earth to do. That's the only way you can explain it because I mean, when she finished that first take, Antonio and I literally just stopped, looked at each other, laid back in our chairs, and we were mesmerized. Like we couldn't believe it. And then we started laughing hysterically just because it was so unbelievable. So anyway, I mean, that was an amazing, beautiful experience, and she really made that track what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've got that feeling that you were talking about when I've heard, Migration perform live. Obviously, when I've heard Pat Metheny perform live, I mean, I've got that feeling that it's a master and you're
Exactly.
hearing something that is just so special that no one else can duplicate
Exactly.
that particular thing. And there's really a bunch of tunes on this record that are just wonderful. We can't talk about them all, unfortunately, but Set Free, about your brother, and
Yeah.
that's the second tune, following Ghost Talk on the first record. Set Free was Just the spiritual nature of it. It really connected with me a ton with my Buddhist practice. I mean, I really felt like there was a definite kinship where you could actually imagine his spirit there in the spiritual world. And I know that this past week was 10 years since his death, and Set Free was such a wonderful way to honor him. So could you talk a little bit about the progression of, say, Ghost Talk on the first record compared to Set Free and how it serves as a nice new chapter in his story?
Well, Ghost Talk, I wrote immediately after his passing, in 2010. And what I was trying to focus on with that song was really the positivity and energy that he emoted, that he the his all-encompassing high energy, adrenaline pumping personality, which is what we all know and love, about my brother. So I didn't I felt at that time that if I wrote a sad song about my brother, he would be like, "Come on, Tana, this is not what I'm all about. Like get yourself together. Come on." That was just him. So I wanted to write a song that sounded positive, that was more about, that kind of brought together the spirit of who I see, oh, who I saw him to be. And then Set Free was more about my experience of his death and my role as a sister. And as this album is about my life as a woman and the roles that women play, one of my most, one of the roles that I've loved and been so thankful for in my life is the role of sister. And it got me to thinking a lot about siblings and the energy between siblings, the stories between siblings, the family history that you have, that you share with a sibling that is unlike any other shared experience or relationship. You have a very specific kind of bond with a sibling that's different from mother child, cousin to cousin, child, child to grandparent, or it's just a siblings have a very unique bond. It's a very special thing. And I, while I was writing this, it was actually on one of the anniversaries of his death that I started this tune. And I was just thinking about what part of being a sister and being his sister will forever stay with him. And that's what I was trying to, the message that I was trying to send through the lyrics.
Wow, that's so beautiful because that song really, well, first of all, what you said about the bond between siblings, I could only imagine because me being an only child and growing up sort of by myself, even though I have half siblings, I never had that sort of dynamic, so I could never imagine what that was like, and it's so beautiful. But from what you've told me about him, the thing that I thought of was the time you told me where he was rapping in Croatian in the car.
Trying to impress Antonio. Exactly. Those little
Him,
stories and
yeah, that's his energy right there, and it's such
exactly.
a perfect picture. And of course, there's "You Taught Me," which is a another beautiful song about dedicated to your dad's lessons. And there's "Animal Instinct," which I think when everybody hears it, they'll be able to know what that's about. I mean, it's a song that definitely gets you in the mood, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, let's hope that animal instinct in this quarantine is I think we're going to be creating a lot of babies. I mean, and the essence of that song is that, women are sexual beings. Women have desires. Women
Oh,
have
yeah.
needs, women have fantasies, women have, a dark animalistic side that just like everybody else. And I think that women's sexuality in society is often projected as the object of male sexuality. So our sexuality doesn't exist on its own. It has to be for the purpose of satisfying a male. And
Yeah.
I'm saying hell no.
Yeah. And I think the over-sexualization of women by men, especially now with 45 there in office, it's taken on so many levels that that's actually an entirely different conversation, but it's really what you were able to project in the song. I thought was great.
Thank you. I mean, it's really just about being unapologetically myself. That's what the
Yeah.
album is about. So this is what my sexuality feels like represented in a song. There you go. You know,
Yeah. Yeah.
and this is what it feels like to be a sister. And this is what it feels like to be a wife. And this is what, but from my perspective, obviously, this is what it feels like to, not be believed or feel solidarity with my sisters who have gone through horrible things. You know, I mean, it's just there's it's basically not editing or censoring myself for the sake of being comfortable.
Right. And I think it's so great that that could be done in this particular period of time, because we're in a time of history right now, despite all of the craziness going on right now. We're in a time in history where the doors are so much more open than they were years and years ago. I mean, I can't really say much about that since I'm only in my 30s. We're both in our 30s, but we're at a point with especially the generation before ours and now the one that's even younger, there's a level of understanding and acceptance of all of those things that simply prior to the onset of the civil rights movement in the 60s, those kind of things in my mind wouldn't have really been possible. And they're taking on a whole new broader scope. But, I wanted to talk real quickly about, your mom has played a huge role in your life, and she was one of the top-rated investment bankers for quite a while back in the 90s, I believe. And also, she's got...
In the 80s.
Oh, the 80s, right. And she has a role in the arts, which I think definitely... has influenced you as far as the success of the fundraiser that you just had live from our living rooms, where you made a fundraiser to help musicians in New York City who are affected by COVID-19 and the grants that you are preparing and that whole thing. You raised a
Yeah, I mean,
phenomenal amount of
me,
money.
I can't take all of the credit. It was, there was an amazing team.
Myself
and vocalist Sarin Tip and saxophonist Owen Broder, and the three of us, we created this live from our living rooms and really put it to action. It's really the most incredible team effort I have ever been a part of, and the two of them are just incredible, and I'm so thankful to them for all of their hard work. And it was an amazing experience to see how well we all worked together. And we're actually working on phase two of Live from Our Living Rooms, which will be announced very, very soon.
That'll be amazing, because I watched the entire festival except for the Bill Frisell set because of all of the technical issues.
So you never got to watch the replay?
No, I totally forgot about it. Yeah.
Oh man, that was my favorite show of the entire week.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so sorry you missed it.
The rest of the whole week though, I think my favorite shows were obviously Christian McBride was and And Melissa Walker, that was just incredible. Michael Mayo, man.
Oh yeah, man. Oh yeah.
Woo!
Beast, beast.
Yeah, I mean, when he was like double and triple timing, I was like screaming.
Yeah.
It was so,
You and
oh,
me
it was
both.
so
I was
good.
alone in my living room, just like, "Oh, Michael, stop it."
Oh man, and then the John Patitucci set was amazing, and I
Was
had to
beautiful.
laugh. Yeah, I had to laugh though because I knew that would be the one set out of all of them, besides maybe the Bill Frisell, where all of the bass and the instrument nerds would come out and be asking like all the questions about the instruments, and the fact that he has Art Davis's bass that was used on the Africa Brass
Oh
Sessions and
yeah,
a couple
that's
of other records.
crazy. Unbelievable.
My mind was like blown. And then, of course, I was like in paroxysms of laughter the entire time because of the facial expressions. Because he'd kind of like gaze into the camera and make like more of those faces as he was playing. And I've always found stuff like that hilarious anyway, but I was dying for that. But the set that you and Antonio had was wow.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. It
I
was
loved it.
a struggle for us because, we wanted to obviously having, Anna having just come out, we wanted to feature some of the music from Anna, and it took us a few days of rehearsing and me trying to figure out a way to loop all this stuff, and it was really it was a good challenge for me to see how I could figure this out, how I could become a band myself and create these tracks and loop live and do all this stuff, because I do loop those voices live when I play it with a band, but I have the piano and the bass doing what the piano and the bass does, and I'm just looping these voices. So I had to basically become the piano and the bass, which was a totally different, challenge. So that was really cool, to be able to do that. And then, we were feeling so emotional about New York City and all of the deaths, and
Of course.
around the time when we the day when we did our show, that was around the day that New York had its highest peak in deaths. I think it was like 800 people died in one day, and it was just we were so distraught. We're also we live in Queens, and we're minutes away from Elmhurst Hospital. So for the entirety of our quarantines, we've been hearing nothing but sirens all day long, all day long.
Oh
And it's
boy.
just and it's just devastating to know how many people are dying just, 10 minutes walk away from our house. It's crazy. So we were feeling really emotional about that. And Antonio said, I think we should do something for New York, and close the set. And
Yeah. That was beautiful.
thank you. And it was his idea. He said, "Why don't we do New York State of Mind?" And I was like, "Billy Joel, what do you mean?" And I was also terrified because that song originally it has lots of chords, and I was like, "I don't know how I'm going to do this." And I tried to like program some harmonies and figure out ways that I could switch the harmonies by based on what chord it was. And I mean, it was just getting so complicated. And he said, "I think we should just do something very meditative, and have it be almost like a meditation, a very hypnotic thing over one drone. Let's not change the harmony at all. People know the song, and people know that harmony, but let's do a tribute to New York our way." And that's what we did, and it ended up being beautiful. And I remember when we rehearsed it the first time and tried it, I mean, we were both so emotional. We were almost in tears just rehearsing it, because it really got to us how meditative it was and how it made us think about everything and the images that were going through our minds. So we felt like it would be a really beautiful way to end the set.
Yeah, it was so powerful because all these deaths that we've had in the jazz community from from COVID-19 are shocking. I mean, when I heard Wallace Roney passed,
Yeah.
I was so shocked because, you know, I had done that interview with him just last summer. And, you know, I should have called him to say, you know, how are you doing? And then before I could, I heard that he had passed. And Manu Dibango passed as well. Tony Allen, the great Afrobeat drummer, he just passed. I don't know if it was from COVID-19 or not, but
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was COVID-19, but I did see that he passed yesterday.
it's
Ellis Marsalis,
Oh, yeah.
Pizzarelli, you know, I mean, it's so many.
Yeah, it's really it's so words can't express like how horrible that is and everything. I mean, this is something that really has to be stopped. And you know, I am one so thankful for you and Antonio for doing something like what you did, because it's so important to help these musicians in New York, because this is the New York is where so much great jazz is. I mean, it's all over the world, obviously, but in New York is where like everybody is. And of course, I forgot about the Joe Lovano set. That was just,
Oh yeah, that was fire. That was amazing.
yeah, the live painting to his improvisation was, that was unbelievable. And
And
Joe
how they just
Lovano,
went for it, you know? It
yeah.
was just it was avant-garde and beautiful and out there and also just unapologetic. And I love it when musicians are just like, you know, I'm gonna just do it. You know, it
Yeah.
makes you it's just such an invigorating feeling to listen to something like that, you know, and so inspiring.
Yeah. I mean, that is really the core of jazz right there. Just get out there and do something without planning. And you know, it's funny because I've been listening to a lot of those 70s Pablo records that Norman Granz produced. You know, Ella Fitzgerald's producer
Of course,
from
his
back
it
in
was
the.
her manager. He's the one that created Verve Records for her.
Yep, and Pablo and Jazz the Philharmonic and broke the racial barrier and all of that, social justice.
Oh yeah.
You know, his big thing, and it's been criticized a lot, but his big thing was pitting all of these great musicians like Dizzy Gillespie, Freddie Hubbard, putting them in the studio and just seeing what happened. And actually, those things created some really wonderful results. And that is just the pinnacle of jazz, to be able to do things like that. And speaking of Joe Lovano, he has a new record that's coming out with the pianist Marcin Wasilewski on ECM in June.
Oh, cool.
So it's called Arctic Rift. So that's something that everybody can look forward to. But the record is available now, and it's available physically only at Bandcamp, correct?
Yep, Bandcamp. I made the decision, you know, when I decided to self-release, I decided to not put it on Amazon, you know, not do any of that stuff. That basically it's all going through Bandcamp. I'm sending out all of the CDs. Unfortunately, when the record came out, we were already in this COVID madness, so there's been a stop to all physical shipments and until further notice. So, you know, we have a shelter in place in New York until May 15th. And obviously, we live in Queens, which is the worst hit area of New York City. So, I won't be sending out physical CDs until it's safe to do so. But I do have my whole back order and list of everybody that should be getting their CDs. And as soon as it's safe to do that, I will get myself over to the post office and send everything.
That is amazing. And is there anything else that you would like to say to the listeners who may be listening to this podcast that are aspiring vocalists or musicians?
Yeah, I think the biggest lesson that I learned in this entire process of doing this record, writing the music, raising the money, putting it together, producing it, doing it all myself, really, and releasing it myself. You know, we're led to believe that our livelihood, our music, our artistry depends on, you know, the mechanisms of the industry. and that you have to somehow change yourself or compromise your integrity in order to be heard or be successful. And I don't think, you know, even though going, you know, fighting against that machine is a daily thing for every artist, one thing that this record has taught me is to believe in myself and always trust my inner voice. My inner voice, your inner voice, everybody's inner voice is right. If you feel something and your intuition tells you something, you have to listen to yourself, because nobody will be able to tell you the truth like you can tell the truth to yourself. And if you just allow the voice of your intuition to come through, I don't think anyone can go wrong.
Oh, wonderfully put. Tana Alexa, thank you so much again. That was
Thank you.
That was so cool. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you once again to Tana Alexa for this amazing interview. And Ona can be purchased physically at Bandcamp as well as digitally, as she said. The New York Jazz Workshop is now doing classes online during the COVID-19 pandemic. And there are many classes that you can take, vocal classes by the likes of Faye Victor. You can take a new class on Ornette Coleman and Harmelotics with guitarist Kenny Wessel. And there are many other classes that you can use to edify your jazz education at the New York Jazz Workshop. For the New York Jazz Workshop at Home podcast, I'm CJ Shern. Peace, love, groove, and keep swinging, everybody.